Welcome to the Point Forward podcast with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's J.R. Radcliffe and Jim Ozarski, an over-caffeinated Milwaukee Bucks conversation.
The Point Forward podcast, Milwaukee Bucks chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We're with you once again. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and on the other line is my colleague at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is the Bucks beat reporter. He is Jim Ozarski. Getting set to cover the Bucks as they head into another back-to-back games coming up starting on Wednesday. We got some back-to-back conversation as it relates to the Charlotte Hornets game coming up here shortly. I know some Bucks fans are going to be interested in that. Later in this show, we are going to hear from Scott Williams. He, as many Bucks fans know, a key part of that 2001 Bucks team that went to the Eastern Conference Finals. Williams was suspended for Game 7 of that series against the Philadelphia 76ers. Very controversial. We talked about it last week, heard from George Karl, the coach of that team. Now we can hear from Scott Williams himself on the 20th anniversary of that 2001 team going to the Eastern Conference Finals. But flash forward a couple decades, and the Milwaukee Bucks are still without their superstar, Jim. Giannis Antetokounmpo sitting on the bench. I believe he's 5 straight games out now. We do not yet know if he'll be back for the games beginning on Wednesday, but I mean, you're as close as anybody is to this team. They're not going to outright tell you. There's no timetable or anything like that. But reading between the lines, how concerned should we be at this point about the Giannis injury?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that he has missed 5 games, you know, we'll find out if he will play, as you said here. But it's not just the games. Which is the most he's missed consecutively in his career. Even if he plays against Minnesota on Wednesday, JR, that's about 12 days off since, you know, experiencing, you know, that pain in warmups, after the great Portland game and in Sacramento. And look, I mean, he also missed 2 other games before that, the Knicks, the Pacers. Factor in some of the off days there. I mean, you're talking a several week injury, which sounds about right for a left knee sprain. I think initially, JR, way back when, you know, there was some thought, oh, it is just load management or kind of the shadow injury. But I think clearly when a player winces like that and hurt, like visibly looks that hurt the way he did, that's an actual injury. You know, that's not just, oh, I've got the regular bumps and bruises, you know, and so clearly I think they're doing the right thing. And yeah, I think it is a concern because that means there's something in there. And even when he comes back to play, you have to wonder, okay, is he working back from it? Is it like totally healthy? Is it just something that's going to linger where, you know, after he's playing 35 minutes a game to get ready for the playoffs, like, will it flare up in the semis or these are conference finals? So yeah, I think it's a real thing, and it's something, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on the rest of the season.
Since we haven't gotten any sort of external confirmation from one of the national writers that always seem to be practically in the MRI rooms, and no one has said he's going to miss a prolonged period of time. No one has said that this is going to hold him out of the playoffs or anything. So I'm guessing this could still be somewhat filed under precautionary. But, you know, it's easy to forget that Giannis got hurt late last year in the playoffs when at the end of the Miami series, the Bucks had really struggled to that point. But then, you know, his injury was sort of the nail in the coffin. It isn't difficult to point out that without him, this team can only go so far. So I guess I don't know. I guess I would still be in a position of thinking he's bound to be playing by the playoffs. You know, that's a long way off still. So I have to think that the Bucks fans should still be comfortable with that. You know, 5 games, like you said, 12 days. Let's say he probably doesn't play in this back-to-back with the Timberwolves and the Hawks before they come back for a pretty good homestand. I mean, we're getting to the point where, you know, half a month or more that he's missing. And now it starts to, like you said, you want to make sure these guys can all play together going into the playoffs for, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, get all on the same page to avoid what they saw last year. So now we get into that, like, should we be worried that he's not going to be effective when he gets back? So again, I'm rambling. I'm just, you know, thinking off the cuff. I'm not like super, super worried about it, but it's definitely a bigger deal than I thought it was when it first sort of flared up.
Yeah, I think it's sort of moved beyond precautionary. I mean, I think he's been off for let's just call it 2 weeks to let that sprain heal. I think maybe, you know, that Knicks game, that Pacers game, you could have filed under that. Like, oh, it's there. We don't think it's that big a deal. Let's give him a day. You know, I think whatever he's been doing, what kind of is interesting. And look, that you mentioned no reporting on it. I mean, Giannis is, look, every star player has this juice if they choose to squeeze it, if you will. It's just like the announcement of his of him deciding to sign the Supermax. That was his announcement to make. So he was the one who did it, right? And I think when it comes to this injury, clearly no one because is going to know what it is or what the problem is because he has chosen to not tell anyone. You know what I mean? And clearly, you know, whoever knows with the Bucks is not going to, because look, these things only come from three places: the team, the agent, the player. And if they're all in agreement on that, you know, that information is not getting out. And yeah, I think, and you're right, typically, you know, especially JR covering football for the last few years, I mean, some athletes and teams and agents can't wait to kind of get out the information. It in some ways, it ends the speculative process, right? Like, oh, you know, this grade 4 ankle or knee, that's a 2.5 week time period. And it kind of just, you know, prevents everyone from being asked about it on a regular basis, but also, you know, it is putting your business out there and, you know, maybe makes people worry more, if they know and they're Googling, you know, WebMD and what things can mean. But so no, I think he's definitely injured. But to your point of the playoffs, that this window they're in, JR, and even if they're coming out of the window, this was the last time they could really do it, I think, and still get him and the guys he's playing with time to sort of restart the engine before the playoffs, right? Like, if they had kept trying to, like, go on it and he plays a game and then he's off for a game and he plays two games and he's off for three games, well, all of a sudden you're getting to the end of, you know, April here, JR, and it's like, well, wait a minute. PJ Tucker hasn't played since March 24th. George Teague just got here. Like, you're really wondering about the chemistry and them coming together. Whereas now, let's say even if he comes back next week, you still have three and a half, you know what I mean, to make it work.
Shout out to Packers secondary member George Teague. You fused, I think, Jeff Teague.
I'm telling you, I'm going to do it. I'm going to call him George Teague. I want to call him Marcus Teague. So my apologies.
No, that's okay. Teague, is he the guy who went to the stadium in Dallas and put the football on the star at midfield? Or
I think so.
I think that's our guy. I don't remember if that was him or if he did the tackling when he played for the Cowboys of someone who tried to do that. I don't remember any of that, but good times, George Teague. Shout out to great Packers callback there.
That was him who knocked over Terrell Owens.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Great stuff. The Bucks did not need Giannis in a dominant 124-87 win in Orlando on Sunday. Orlando is bad. That's not an unsurprising outcome, but it did snap a 3-game losing streak that the Bucks had endured. That included a pretty messy loss to the Warriors, sort of a fourth quarter collapse. We've seen a little bit of that from the Bucks. They also struggled in the fourth quarter against the Mavericks when they lost 116-101 last Thursday. And then they came home. They came home after the 6-game road trip. They wrapped up the road trip at 3-3, probably fine given the injury situation. And they rest everybody. They sit out their entire starting five. It was a bench game. The bench did what they could. They ended up losing 127-119. Second time that we have seen that now. In the last couple weeks, along with that Knicks game that you mentioned, where it's just reserves and they held their own. They did, I think, as well as you could expect them to do against a team that that could very well be going to the playoffs. Certainly, in the Hornets' case, they will be going to the playoffs. But I'm interested in the strategy a little bit, and I think maybe I've been looking at this wrong. I've been just very much paying attention to the race for that top seed, whether or not the Bucks can get past both Philadelphia and Brooklyn to get the top seed and not have to face both of them. And then I also, you know, I look back and I think to myself, well, the Bucks had the top seed last year and the year before, and it didn't serve them well enough. You know, they didn't even get out of the second round last year, and it was a fifth seed that goes all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals. So, you know, it really is also about the team that's healthiest and playing the best at the end of the year. I wonder if maybe Mike Budenholzer just doesn't care about that top seed. I'm sure in some level he does. He you know, who wouldn't want to play? You know, who wouldn't want to have the perceivably easiest path? But I have to think in his mind, especially after the last 2 years, there is no easy path. You got to play some pretty good teams regardless, and there's no sense in fighting, you know, selling out, having your starters play every game, every night to get that top seed, only to not have it matter in the playoffs. So I wonder, second game of a back-to-back, it made sense that if you wanted to rest everybody, that would be a good time. Also, I guess you could have rested them for the Magic game, skipped a little bit of the road trip, and, you know, just gone after the Hornets at home in front of the home fans. I don't know what... I know you've heard a lot about this from fans, people irritated that the Bucks came home, they paid tickets to see, you know, the second string. But what do you think the calculus is here? What do you think Mike Budenholzer is looking for when he decides, you know what, tonight we really are going to punt? Yes, we've already punted one game, but we're going to do it again because, quite honestly, the only thing that matters is being healthy at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that is his calculus. You know, we asked him about it, and he said, look, it's, you know, chasing the one or the two seed isn't really part of his thought process. I think that's one of those things that if it happens, it happens. Or maybe if it's a, you know, you're in Chicago to end the season, you win the game, you get one of those, like, that may change it. But in terms of, as we record this, and a April game or an end of March game like the Knicks, it's just not, you know, that's not in there for him. You're right, though. I mean, if you're Bucks fans, this team has been on the road since, you know, essentially March 28th, let's call it. And the two home games they had, March 27th and April 9th, nobody played. It was, you know, and I know for as much as you love the Thanasis and Mamadi show, and maybe Bucks Twitter does, I can tell you that the people who spent, you know, $400 to $800 to go to those games in limited capacity were not thrilled. And, you know, I have no response for them. You know, that some people somehow thought it was my job to, you know, hold the Bucks accountable for such a thing. I mean, the teams will tell you, like, they can't, there's no guarantee of who will play on any given day. But I wonder if that should be a calculus, JR. Like, you know, Budenholzer, I guess in his tenure, from what the others have told, like Marcus Johnson, talked to him this week about Zora Stevenson making history in her broadcast on the 9th, or even, you know, Eric Name in the press box. I mean, in Budenholzer's time, he generally plays everyone the first game of the back-to-back, rests everyone the second. Like, that's just what he does. And wherever that falls, that's where it falls. It just so happened that those games have been at home. Now, conversely, I have been in markets, football and otherwise, where coaches, managers are aware of the home dynamic, right? Like, they take that into account to a degree, you know? So I don't know. I think for fans, there's clearly a right answer in that conversation. I don't think, you know, I think organizations will say the right thing, but they don't care. Like, I think the history of pro sports shows that, like, the teams really don't care about the fans, like, in that way. It's about winning the games in the long run. So, I don't disagree with Mike Budenholzer's methods by any means, because you're right. If they win the championship, JR, no one remembers April 9th, except for maybe the fans who paid $700. But even then, they're like, well, if that helped them win, I guess it was okay, right? Like, I think at the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're going to have, yes, very several disappointed people in the short term. But I even think most fans at home don't care, you know, as long as they think their team is taking the steps toward a championship. I really believe the majority of Bucks fans or fans of sports teams in general, like you said, are driven toward the same goal of the championship. And yeah, they want to see their guys play. There may be a little kid who never gets to go to Bucks games and he wanted to see, you know, some starters and he didn't get any of that. I think if I were to advocate on their behalf, I would say, yeah, understandable that you're going to rest a guy or two. And especially with Giannis out, if you sense that there are games, I don't think the Knicks would be this case or the Hornets necessarily, but if you sense there are games where, first of all, it's second game of a back-to-back, might struggle to win this game anyway without Giannis, we might as well just go all in on getting everybody that rest. But, you know, I think you could also argue you don't need to give everybody the rest. You know, you can play a couple starters. You can sit a couple down, rotate them. Now, maybe in the long run, that's a bad idea because then you're not, quote unquote, punting games. You're running the risk of losing, let's say, the Hornets game and then the Magic game because two of the starters who played against the Magic didn't play against the Hornets or vice versa, you know. So I you know, trying to see it from all the angles here, to completely sub out an entire line change of starters isn't unusual, I think a little unusual, but on the other hand, you know, this Bucks team is going to the playoffs. Like, that is not going to change. All they have to do is really just do the bare minimum to show up in Orlando, beat the Magic, which is exactly what happened. They are going to have enough in their holster to end up in the postseason. So, you know, especially after a fifth seed just went to the Eastern Conference Finals, it's a little difficult to argue, well, you really want to get as high a seed as possible. I mean, that team literally was the underdog on paper. Miami was in every round of the Eastern Conference playoffs, and they won anyway. So, I don't know. I feel for those fans, but I agree with you that I think in the long run, most people, most adult Bucks fans are going to feel like, eh, whatever it takes to get into that championship mode at the end of the year is fine.
No, you're right. I think that's definitely the end of season calculus. Now, I guess to your broader point of, you know, running down the top seed for matchups. I mean, now they are three games out, and I would have been curious, JR, if like they had already played all their games against the 76ers and Nets, and we're four games out, and we're like,
yeah,
wow,
that's a good point.
You know, we can't catch them, so that's what. Or now it's like, well, they still have four games left, so they can catch them if they all play. You know what I mean? It could really be just an odd schedule quirk on the part two where they kind of looked at it. We're like, look, Giannis needs this time for his knee before these games. Let's do it. And look, next week is coming up fast. The two games, 76ers. Maybe he can't play or is just coming back. That is what it is. But they still can. They still have it sort of in their control. It's all interesting stuff, and let's be honest, it's the dog days of this NBA season, so it's what we're talking about.
Yeah, like you said, they're 3.5 out behind the 76ers, but the 76ers and the Nets, first of all, play each other on Wednesday, so someone's going to lose. And 3.5, that's right where they were last week when they were 3 out, and the week before that when we talked, and they were 3 out, and they're still way ahead of the fourth seed, which is a new team every day. Today it's the Hawks as we record this, and you know, that's 4.5 games ahead of the Hawks. They're probably not going to get caught for that third spot. And again, even if they did, I'm not sure how big of a deal that would be. So that is all part of the consideration process here. Before we let you go, I wanted to ask specifically about Pat Connaughton. He's gotten a lot of run. I know at the beginning of the year, there were plenty of people who were a little dubious about the fact that they had re-signed Pat Connaughton to a fairly nice 3-year free agent contract. Of course, that contract was originally reported out as 2 years, and then, you know, with all the roster machinations, it turned out they couldn't offer him the 2-year deal and had to go up to a 3-year deal to make everything work with all the, you know, with all the roster rules. I don't even want to revisit all that. It's such a ginormous puzzle. But people were irritated thinking the Bucks might have screwed something up to compel this third year on his contract. Mike Budenholzer clearly likes working with Pat Connaughton. He's in there in crunch minutes, doing a lot of different things. I think he's had a pretty good year. I don't know how you would necessarily categorize it, but it seems like he's given them everything that you would hope you would get from Pat Connaughton. Tell me what you've seen from him this season.
Yeah, we did touch on this early in the year. I mean, clearly John Horst and Mike Budenholzer saw something in his game that they wanted you know, to be a part of this team for 1, 2 years, 3 years, maybe. It's about the 3-point shot. And he is currently at a massive career high, kind of like Dante DiVincenzo. He's a 33% shooter. His last 2 years with the Bucks, he is shooting at 38.7% clip. There are nights he has gotten really hot and it has looked really good. But that's what an average is, right? It's not always going to be that, but 38%, that's a huge jump. I mean, his previous career high was 35% in Portland, you know, before he came to Milwaukee. So that's a big deal, especially in this offense where he is one of those, you know, someone else drives, he kicks it out guys. You know, his now 4.8 rebounds per game, slightly above his career average. That also matters because, as we have talked about, Brooke Lopez is not there to rebound. It's the wings. You know, Pat Connaughton's a bigger guy who goes to get some of those rebounds. Now, you know, he's playing 23 minutes a game. I think some of that is inflated because PJ Tucker has not played since, what, March 24th, JR? I mean, it's because, yeah, I mean, he has started three games now since Giannis has been out when Mike Budenholzer's wanted to go small. I don't think that's ideal for John Horst or Mike Budenholzer. I don't think they want that, but some of it is out of necessity right now. I mean, you know, Connaughton is a 6'5 wing is what they call him. PJ Tucker is what, a 6'8 wing. So 6'7. I mean, that's part of this. It's yeah, he's playing a lot, but it's because of who isn't also. So, I think Pat has had a good season, to be honest. I think he has had a good season. I'm not going to get on the train of, you know, he's playing too much. He's playing too many key minutes or late in games, because until PJ Tucker's back and totally healthy, until Giannis is back and totally healthy, how can we say, like, oh, that's what it's going to be? Because I know people want to go there, but we don't know, right? Until they're all healthy, we don't know. And then I guess we can entertain that conversation if in, you know, game 6 of the semifinals against the 76ers and they lose and PJ Tucker's on the bench, or I don't know, Brooke Lopez is on the bench, or, you know what I mean, JR? Like, I feel like there's this rush to just assume that a thing is going to happen because of the past or whatever. I think in this case, we owe the injured players the chance to get healthy, and we owe Pat that chance as well. But I think up to this point, he's been good. I mean, look, you're going to set a career high by 50 percentage points? Like, that's not a joke. Like, that's not a bad thing. So I think for now, you know, he's been what they have hoped he would be when they brought him back.
Again, the Bucks play at Minnesota against the Timberwolves on Wednesday night. As we record this on Tuesday, I guess it's not 100% clear if that game is going to happen. I think so, but all sports Monday night in Minneapolis for Minneapolis teams were canceled in the wake of the shooting of Dante Wright at the hands of a police officer in Minneapolis. That community having to do a lot of healing over the last year, so that maybe is a little bit up in the air. But then they go to Atlanta before coming back home. Before I let you go, Jim, any last thoughts? Anything else you want to hit on before we get out of here?
Yeah, I do. I mentioned it briefly there. I do want to shout out our friend Zora Stevenson, the Buck sideline reporter for. Was it let me get it right? Bally Sports Network.
Bally Sports Wisconsin, yes.
I got one of them right.
I think Bally Sports Network works too. You know, it's like, yeah. Fox Sports Network, whatever, yeah. Same thing.
But anyway, that doesn't matter. She matters. She was in the chair for play-by-play with Marcus Johnson on April 9th, the first woman to do so in not just for the Bucks, JR, but I believe all of the major men's sports in this state on a local broadcast. I don't think any other woman has been in that play-by-play chair for the Brewers or Packers locally. And not very many women have done that nationally. So shout out to Zora for doing it. She had a tough deal with that interesting lineup with the Bucks and Hornets. Not very many women have done it, and we'll have something up over at jsonline.com, you know, here soon on that. A lot of people around the country were happy for her. We put that in perspective. So yeah, I just wanted to mention that. So shout out to Zora.
Yeah, Zora's been great on the broadcast in any capacity. Awesome to hear her take the reins for the play-by-play. And again, like Jim said, that'll be up at jsonline.com. You can find all of his Bucks coverage at jsonline.com. Jim, let's talk to Scott Williams here, shall we?
Oh, my God. So, real quick for the fans, not that I said a whole lot in my interview with George Karl about this. I say even less with Scott Williams. It was one of those things where he picks up the phone and I'm like, hey, Scott, 20 years, Eastern Conference Finals, game six, and he just kind of went. So it was great. He's really interesting. It clearly still affects him. So, yeah, there's a lot of Scott Williams coming up, but enjoy it, though, because it was fun to catch up with him.
We will bid adieu here, but we'll let the interview that you did with Scott Williams carry the rest of the day. Thanks for joining me, Jim. We'll chat with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. And here is that interview with Jim Ozarski with Scott Williams, Milwaukee Bucks player from the 2001 Eastern Conference Finals team.
What's your maybe memories of Bucks fans or even that kind of time?
Yeah, I was just in Milwaukee 2.5 years as a player. And it was a perfect time for me in my career because things weren't going well for me in Philadelphia, not only with injuries, but just with Larry Brown. We just had no relationship with him whatsoever. And it goes back to 10 years prior to him taking the job with the Sixers. But it was just a bad situation that I found myself in when I was the good guy on a lot of bad teams. I just couldn't understand how all of a sudden I was the bad guy as the team was starting to emerge. And I think a lot of it had to do with Coach Brown. But yeah, when he traded me to Milwaukee, it was like a breath of fresh air because I knew realized I was another Carolina guy as the head coach. But I realized that it was a time for me to get a fresh start. And if people just give me an opportunity to show that I'm passionate about the game, the community, and the team's success, I thought things would work out for me. And I call it just kind of a blue-collar town. I don't know what most people call it, but yeah, Seems to me if you're a hard-working player, it's a hard-working town, and you have passion and you give the energy, they'll respect that. And the Bucks fans, they certainly did. They gravitated to that team. We made the playoffs the first year and got swept, and then you know, we had the growing pains and made the playoffs the next year and get beat in a 5-game series against the same team that swept you the year before. So that just, you know, lights a fire in your belly a little bit more that you can see it coming. And you got, you know, rising stars, including Robinson and Ray Allen and Sam Cassell. I mean, they were either the one or two highest scoring trio in the NBA, maybe behind the Lakers. Yeah, I think the Lakers had Fisher, Kobe Bryant, and Shaquille O'Neal, or maybe it was Robert Horry, one of those. But anyway, I think the Lakers had that combination as number one. But we were number two as far as a scoring duo. And I think we were one of the top one or two teams in the league as far as scoring points. So it was our year. But I think a lot of the NBA brass wasn't ready for it to be our year. Let me just put it that way. And the Eastern Conference Finals didn't work out for us the way we would have wanted it to. It certainly didn't work out for me the way that I wanted. I was hell-bent after being on some really bad teams in Philadelphia, getting back and getting to the NBA Finals and wanting that for my teammates as well. They had only guy I think I had finals experience was Sam Cassell, and that's a special level in the NBA that I think most careers, if you don't reach the NBA finals, you can say you played in the NBA, but it's a different type of experience than if you make it to an NBA finals.
What was I mean, were you all together? How did that – do you recall how that – I mean, obviously you went to Philadelphia then, so how
– like, what was – I was at the base of the steps of the plane to board the charter.
Okay.
I mean, there wasn't, like, any rumors about it, anything like that. We celebrated our victory in Game 6. We righted our minds at practice. I think we had either a light practice or a film session when we met at the airport. I believe it was the next day. And, we went to the base of the staircase to get ready to walk onto the plane. And, I keep pulling up. Ernie Grunfeld. So Ernie Grunfeld says, "I'm Scott, I need to talk to you." I'm like, "Oh, shit." "You don't ever talk to me. What's going on here?" And that's when he let me know that they had suspended. My first thought was, "I'm not going." I said, "This is they're going to suspend me without even talking to me." I was like, "Who?" They said, "Ernie, this is not right. Who do we call? Who do I get to explain my side of the situation to?" Like, I'd never heard of something like, how are you going to suspend me without talking to me from this?
Right.
So I said, I'm not going to go. And so I walked back into the terminal and composed myself. And I said, I can't be that guy that, doesn't go and support his team. So I took my ass back to the plane and, we flew off to Philadelphia, realizing I wasn't going to be able to be a part of it. But one of the things that I got tired of, and not so much complaining about the officials, I don't think I even got a technical in the series, but I'd seen this all the games 3 and 4, 4 and 5, rather, and I had gotten some really just soft fouls, the ticky-tock variety ones. And I was just on the bench a lot, and I just thought, I'm tired of getting cheap fouls, and if I'm going to be eliminated and not have an opportunity to make it to the playoffs or have to sit the bench, I'm going to earn my next foul. And I tried to kind of get to Kimbe Mutombo in the double team, and I thought I fouled him, but they didn't call it. Then when Allen Iverson came down the lane, I realized I wasn't going to get into position. I was like, well, I'm definitely not going to let him get an am-1. I'm going to knock him down. So those were the kind of ways that I was just kind of taught to play in the playoffs. You played hard. Fouls, you earned fouls. You didn't get ticky-tack fouls as a big guy in the NBA in the playoff situation. So I thought the officials were, maybe not beknownst to them, but they didn't call that series very well. I mean, our star player, Glenn Robinson, didn't shoot a free throw until game 5. I mean, that's just, that's ridiculous. So I saw all the conspiracy things going around, and I started to think, well, yeah, maybe there was some truth to that. At the end of the day, it is a business and it's entertainment. And I don't want to say anything bad about David Stern or where he took this league, but, as a commissioner, I think he had a lot of control. Maybe too much. And, it was tough. And, star players got the benefit of the whistles, but you didn't think star teams would. And I think maybe that was kind of the part that maybe lives a little bit about, well, I don't know. I do go back and I analyze every play from every game. I don't like to live in the past like that with my life, but I do know those were special times, and that Bradley Center and those fans in Milwaukee certainly deserved, I think our team at full strength for game 7. And when they went back and reclassified the foul on me, I think it really damaged our team, from a standpoint of missing me. So I was a good part of that team, plus coming off a great game in game 6. And then this just the psyche of realizing that they're going to have to be half man. I think we started Darvin Ham in that game, who I don't believe even played in game number 6. So it just threw us off whack. And not to say that we were better than Philadelphia, but we would have given them a better game in game 7, I think, for sure. I think we had a lot of momentum, even though we were going on the road, and we had a lot of momentum coming out of game 6. And then the league took it, pulled that away from us. And that was tough. To get a suspension from a game 7 of the Eastern Conference Final. I mean, that stuck with me for a long time in the summer. I didn't feel as though I left my team down. I felt as though the league took something from us on that one.
Not that you would have won in the finals, but you didn't even get a chance to try. It seems so raw. Yeah, like, well, you know what I mean?
I think sometimes you realize maybe you didn't get a fair shake to give it an opportunity. And that is the painful part, because it's just not the games that you win and you lose. It's the sacrifice that you put into it. And I'm not even just talking about the hard work, the film session, the being away from family. It's literally, the missed opportunities to go to weddings or, see births of your nieces and nephews, celebrations, anniversaries, all those things that you give up for training. You can't put a price tag or a ring on those types of things. It's just, this is the sacrifice that I'm willing to make for this opportunity. And then someone in a suit in an office building in New York City just looks at one play and goes, well, yeah, I think that's a flagrant too. That to me, it's the hardest part for me to let go, because it's all the little things that you put your body through, you put your mind through, you put your family through, you the things that you miss that you'll never get back in life for that opportunity, and then they have that kind of a fair shot at that opportunity stolen away. So you kind of hurt. It was pain for your teammates. That was the most painful thing that I think I had during my career was watching Game 7 from a hotel room in Philadelphia. A team that hell I wanted to be more than anybody on the squad, because that was my former squad. I mean, they left me for good and traded me to Milwaukee, and the coach was a jackass to me and the whole nine yards. I wanted to send them home for the summer. It was a good team. I really wish of all the things that you kind of wish would have gone differently for your basketball career. I mean, not making a Final Four on some really good college teams is one of those things that still haunts me to this day. Like, how the hell did that, not happen for me? And then, this one is probably up there, I think, in the top three as well. How the hell do you get suspended from Game 7 for the Eastern Conference Finals? And I realized, I had two flagrant fouls earlier that were, I don't know. One was borderline. One could have gone either way. I thought they said, well, I didn't play the ball. I got two hands on the ball, so how am I not playing the ball if I have two hands on the ball? But, the one against Allen Iverson was a legit it was a hard playoff foul, no doubt about that. But you think about a flagrant foul as you hit somebody, when they're in the air or when they're you're not making a play on the ball. I basically bumped into his body with my forearm, not my elbow. My arm was tucked at my side, and I bumped into him to not let him get to the basket. Well, if he's weighing a buck 45, and I'm weighing 245, yeah, he's going to hit the ground hard. But that was playoff basketball, and I for the life of me, it does pain me that they upgraded that call, but I wouldn't have done anything different on the play, because I was trying to send a message to my team as well that we're laying it all on the line. I don't care if it's your mama coming down the lane, you take a hard foul and not give her an and-one. That was kind of my mentality that I had learned from my battles, 10 years prior to that with the Bulls.
Yeah.
To the life of me, I don't understand the rationale before it. The had Iverson been knocked out of the game, would have been one thing. But he didn't miss a moment of action. It wasn't that kind of a play that caused the guy to have to even go back to the locker room. It was just a hard play. He as he was coming forward, I was going towards him and trying to make what I thought was going to be a step in to get a charge. So it's like, okay, yeah, two guys collide going 100 miles per hour on the floor. Well, the smaller guys don't get the worst of it. But I didn't see the need, even at the time, to say, oh, okay, you knocked the guy out of the game. That's why they lost Game 6. Nah, I mean, he hit both free throws, got the ball back, hit a three, came down, hit a three in like four games. It's just like, there was really no harm done to change the outcome of that game. So I didn't understand why do you want to try to mess with the outcome in game seven. You know, I'll take my penalty for the flagrant foul. They got the ball back. Let's play ball. That part of it never made sense to me.
Right.
He wasn't hurt. He scored 48 points in the game. He went on to score 48 points in the damn game. Almost brought him back in the fourth quarter single-handedly. I think he had 24 points in the fourth quarter. I was like, what? Right. What more do you want? Right. I was looking forward to the opportunity. I think I wanted it so badly for myself and for my teammates and for the city of Milwaukee. They deserve more championships than they've got. You know, I know Green Bay is always going to be the fan favorite or the town favorite, so to speak. But boy, they really came out and supported the Bucks like I'd never seen an organization, a community to do since I was in Chicago playing with the Bulls of Michael Jordan. Yeah. Chicago Stadium, that's another place that got pretty damn loud too. But that was a special group.
Thank you for listening to the Point Forward Podcast, a Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and JSOnline.com production.